just wait until the shine wears off. The same, so they knight you, they gone, good night you with. Yeah, that's only half if they like you. They ain't even the half what they might do. Don't believe me, ask Michael. See Martin, see Malcolm. See Biggie, see Pop, see success in his outcome. See Jesus, see Judas. See Caesar, see Brutus. See successes like suicide. Suicide is a suicide. If you succeed, prepare to be crucified. Media medals, yeah, they sue you, you settle. Every step you take, they remind you, you ghetto. So it's tough being Bobby Brown. To be Bobby then, you have to be Bobby now. Now the question is to have had and lost better than not having it all? Because, dog,
it's hard. Just wait until the shine wears off. What's good, everybody? Welcome to the Cold World Podcast. Would also like to welcome everybody that's streaming in live on Periscope and Meerkat. It's been a while. I did a show 2 weeks ago. I want to get back on my weekly. It's just been busy, but the last show did really well. So thank you, everybody, for being supportive. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate it. I appreciate the folks that's tuned in to listen, and just been some crazy stuff going on the last few weeks. One of the things, tonight's a tough night. My Bulls lost. It was a tough loss. LeBron James did it to us. It was bad. But the thing, as a Bulls fan, I gotta be happy about is Derrick Rose is starting to look like Derrick Rose, which is really dope. And, I'm a fan regardless, man. I'm also a Warriors fan. But if they playing each other, I'm a Bulls fan. But I rock with the Warriors and the Bulls through both them rough years. It's a whole lot of new bandwagon fans, especially for the Warriors, man. The Bay is bad for that. The Bay is so bad for having bandwagon fans. It's crazy. I am a true Bay Area fan when I say it. Like, I like the Oakland teams. You can't, you know, as somebody that was born in Chicago, I learned very early that you can't be a White Sox fan and a Cubs fan. And I feel like the same is true for Bay Area sports. Like, you can't be an A's fan and a Giants fan or a Niners fan and a Raiders fan. You got to pick. You got to pick what your horse is. You can't just go back and forth. You know what I'm saying? You can't do that. You just can't do that. I don't think you can do that. But I don't think people really care what I think. But anyway, everybody's a Warriors fan now. Yeah, if it came down to it, I would definitely be rooting for the Bulls over the Warriors if I had to. But I'm glad that both are playing well. If they were both somehow able to make it to the finals, that would be great for me. I do feel that the Bulls had to get that win tonight to go up 3-1. I don't know if we're going to be able to finish that down in Cleveland. But we'll see. I don't know. LeBron James is a bad dude, but so is Derrick Rose. So the other thing, the one thing I think I'm really excited about, I'm not mentioning the fight. I'm not doing it. It's just not about to happen. That's not sucking up no energy here. The one thing I'm really excited about, though, is I have ended my HuffPost hiatus. Most of you know, if you listen in, that I write and I speak across the country and I speak in a bunch of different places. And I normally write for Huffington Post, and I just haven't written in a long time. Somebody's telling me that they met Chris Mullin. Chris Mullin is always around here, too. You can be downtown Oakland in the city center, and you'll see Chris Mullin just chilling. The other thing that I'm trying to do, if things do sound a little disjointed, because there's a somewhat of a delay between the live streaming and then where I'm actually at in the story. But what I wanted to do is, for people that came in through Meerkat and Periscope that's rocking with me live, I want to make sure that I interact with them as they say things. So you might hear me like jump back maybe about a minute or so. to be able to address those things, which is why I just addressed the Chris Mullins thing, because a friend of mine just asked, just made a comment about Chris Mullins. But back to this writing thing, I wrote for Huffington Post, and then I just got really busy, and I wasn't super inspired to write anything over the last year or so. And normally when I go on speaking tours and I start talking, it's usually the base of that is usually my writing. And so what I felt that I covered a lot of things early on with the 7-8 articles that I initially wrote, and I've been able to just kind of use those. And everything that I've talked about, some one of those articles has discussed or touched on. And I had moved into this new type of work and doing new things and struggling with various stuff. And I don't know, man, I just got back on my writing bug again. And I'm contemplating if I'm gonna have a flood, or if I'm going to just kind of like stretch that out. But I don't know, man, today felt great. I haven't felt that feeling of actually writing, completing something, turning it into the editors and waiting to hear what they had to say about it in a long time. And so what I wrote about, the article is titled "The Biggest Loser Ever," or "The Be the Best Loser," how to be the greatest loser ever. And basically the way that the article came together is a few years ago was talking to a young person. It was a while ago. It was maybe like 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And they were just real nervous because they had applied to a bunch of schools. I pushed them to apply to a lot of colleges, and the rejection letter started to come in before his acceptance letters did. And he was just really nervous and afraid. And then eventually, and so some of the questions he was asking himself was, man, maybe I'm just not worth it. Maybe all our hard work isn't going to pay off. Maybe, you know, I'm supposed to be in these streets, yada, yada, yada. Like, he went through all these different feelings, and I was with him through that stuff, and I talked to him because I remember those feelings when I applied to a bunch of colleges when I was younger, and I got a lot of rejections early on as well. And so we talked about those things, and then he eventually got into one of his schools, and then the questions changed, right? Then the questions was like, well, damn, maybe I'm not smart enough. Maybe I won't be able to finish. Maybe I don't have the gumption to get through. Maybe I don't belong here with these people. You know, there's a reason why people in my family haven't gone to college and so on. And he just kept going. And again, I totally understood where he was coming from because I felt the exact same thing. So what I did is I engaged that young man in a conversation. And basically it was called, I call it the failure conversation. And we had a really good talk. And so what that entailed is, I think a lot of times, especially when I work with young people and they get to see a somewhat further along, you know, like they get to see me further along in the process of who I want to be. And they feel that my experience has been like this linear experience of just like being successful, like that I just grew up a certain type of way, and I had all this support, and I went to school, I killed college, you know what I'm saying? I graduated, got a job, then killed grad school, and then I'm out speaking and on tour and talking and all this stuff. And that's just so far from the truth. So in my article, I talk about, I refer back to the super Negro syndrome, where when somebody that looks like us does some crazy stuff or some things that we can't imagine somebody doing, we tend to put them in this super Negro bracket. And the reason why we do that is because if they are this supreme being, if they're this super person, that absolves me from being able to do it or having to do it. Like, we're just different. And I kill that. My path wasn't straight at all. My path was windy, and it was tough, and it was extremely hard. And so I just went through my failures. And I talked about when I got into college, and even though I was at maybe the top 5% of my class when I was at Emory High, I left Emory High School in my senior year because my basketball coach left. But for the most part, I spent the majority of my high school career in Emory High School. It's a small high school right outside of Oakland in Emeryville, California. And I was top 5%, top 7% student. And I got into college. And when I got into college, I entered into not just remedial math, but both remedial math and remedial English. And so here I am, this dude that thinking that he's hot stuff because I graduated somewhat high and you know, I did pretty well in school. I thought I was a pretty smart guy. And here I am in both remedial math and remedial English. And so that one, that was embarrassing. And two, it was discouraging. And even though I didn't have anything to necessarily be ashamed of at the moment, because a plurality of black folks in the year 2001 that were entering college were entering into remedial courses. The state of California actually just recently made some changes so we could make sure that young people are getting caught up before they get to college, so they don't have to take those remedial classes like I did. Now, so that happened. And then what I had to do is I had to work full time because I needed to pay for school. I also worked work study in the library, and I took about 20 units. And I took about 20 units each quarter. I was on a quarter system. So I was busting my butt, and it took me a while to get into my college groove. Like, I didn't just start out understanding how to be successful in college. I failed a lot. I didn't fail classes per se, but I was up. So what college looked like for me is I'm up at 1 o'clock in the morning doing work that shouldn't take me that long to do. And I learned that I am a slow processor. It takes me a long time, even now, even today, even in the job I have right now, it takes me a long time to process stuff. I can't just read things and have it. I have to read it. I have to have a discussion about it. I have to write about it. I have to read it again. Then I have to talk to somebody before I can really internalize it and utilize that information. All right. So that's one. I learned that about myself. The other thing is when I graduated, I started working, and then I wanted to go to grad school. And I went through the process again of applying to schools. And again, I got rejected a lot. I got told no a whole lot, right? And so that was, again, really discouraging. I was like, damn, I don't think I'm going to be able to go to grad school. And, you know, I ended up getting into San Francisco State. And I had a professor from Cal State East Bay, which used to be Cal State Hayward, that wrote me a dope letter. This is what happened. His name was Professor Kim Duran. I owe him a lot. He wrote me a dope letter to the MPA program in San Francisco, and I, to this day, believe that that's what got me in. Because when I got there, I don't even know if they're supposed to tell me this, but they told me I was one of the last people for that cohort that got picked. And so God was looking out for me. So I start grad school, and again, slow start again. I some classes I do great in, some classes I'm like really struggling. And for grad school, you're not on academic probation at a 2.0 and below. You get on that thing if you drop under a 3.0. And so working full time, trying to knock out the school stuff, struggling yet again, up 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. And then the most discouraging part, the scariest part, was graduating. I had to do this final project, this final paper, and that thing failed. Like, that was not acceptable. It was not master's level. And it came time to graduate. And so my dean and everybody was like, yo, you need to go get your cap and gown and stuff. I was like, look, I'm not walking the stage unless I've done all this stuff, until I've finished it. And they were like, Charles, you're crazy. A lot of people walk the stage and then come back and finish. But I couldn't do that. I personally felt like I would be a fraud. And I shared this with this kid. And I shared how that made me feel. And I didn't walk. And honestly, at that point, walking didn't mean that much to me. I was at a place where I wanted, just give me the paper. Just give me my diploma. I'm good. Let me have something to show these white folks so I can get a job and you got to pay me more. Because let's face it, I mean, I loved my MPA program, but let's not forget why I went there. I went there so I could have more earning potential and earning power, right? So, I didn't walk. I never celebrated graduating, getting my master's degree. I just didn't do it. And I did. I passed the paper. I passed the project. And at that time, when I got it, it was like, you know, it takes 4 months, 5 months for them to actually send your paper diploma in the mail. And so by the time I got it, I was like, all right, cool. I can put this, I can, it's on resumes, but I can actually put this on resumes without feeling like I'm lying. And that's just hood trauma, man. I had graduated, I was done. I got my letter saying that you're good to go, you're clear. But I had so many things taken from me when I was younger that I wasn't counting no eggs until they hatched. It's a whole bunch of times somebody told me that I had an omelet and that egg was spoiled rotten. So I wanted to wait till it was totally done. So the other thing that I told this young man of another failure was a failure that I had with a family member. And so, you know, it's no secret if you've read anything I wrote, I was homeless when I was younger. I was homeless for an extended period of time as a young person. I lived in shelters and I lived with family. Well, one of the family members that I lived with was my aunt Cookie. My auntie Cookie, I love Cookie, man. She was just firecracker. Loved her. She actually was the glue that held our family together. She made us do like boring barbecues and go to Kennedy Park. It's a little park in Hayward, California in the Bay Area. She would make us go and do that stuff. And she ended up getting an aneurysm and she died. And her son, my cousin, my big cousin, he was in jail because that's just what he does. He is a career jail person. And right, so he was in jail. I was in my early 20s. I had to take care of my aunt's, you know, affairs and help practically bury her. And that was just a lot. So anyway, my uncle, my favorite uncle, Uncle Skipper, who lives in Chicago, I talk about Boo a lot. Boo is his son, like a brother to me. I love these people. I got my dad, me and my dad are cool, but he played that father role for me a lot while I was in college because me and my dad didn't always see eye to eye. And so I get a call from him saying that my cousin, not Boo, the aunt whose son died, saying that he was getting out of jail and he needed some help. Well, at that time I had multiple cars because I was really bad with money and I did stupid stuff. But I did have a commuter car and I had my truck because I transported kids. I was a social worker. So I gave him one of my cars and I just did whatever I could do to help him. I wanted to make sure my cousin was straight. It made me feel good that I was the person in the family that was responsible and people could come to me for help. It made me feel like I was taking care of my family because what was the point of doing all this stuff, right? The point of doing all this stuff was to be able to take care of people. Wrong, right? So my cousin is a shyster. This is what he does. It doesn't matter that I buried his mama. It doesn't matter. Like, it's just a lot of things that just didn't matter, right? And he had access to my house, and that dude robbed me and my roommate blind. I mean, he stole jewelry. He stole my brother, my roommate at the time. He did the show with me. You know, he's a military dude, so he had like these nice guns that he had, like this collection. He stole that stuff. I mean, he stole thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff. Thousands and thousands of dollars worth of stuff and disappeared. That cost me a lot of money. I am still paying for the effects of that, right? So that was another one. And then another failure that I had was I started a business with one of my best friends and another homie. And we just didn't make no money. We actually did have a decent business. We made a lot of money for other people. And I talk about that in the piece. But we didn't really make a whole lot of money. And so the rest of the money that I had after all that stuff that happened with my family, the rest of the little bit of money I had, I lost in this investment, right? So these four losses, these four L's that I took, you know, me and this young person, we bonded over this stuff and we talked about it for a long time. He asked a lot of questions. This was not one conversation. This was a conversation over like days. We just continuously had this conversation while he went through this process, right? So I had to share with him where those things put me. like those losses put me on the right path to be able to get to where I'm able to get to now. The struggling in college let me know that, look, school ain't about who's the smartest. It's about who can endure. It's about who you know, what resources you can leverage, right? And I learned how to do that. I learned how to also have the wherewithal to stay in it and just knowing that I'm going to have to be up at 1 or 2 in the morning at a Starbucks doing this work, okay? Grad school also let me know that, you know, if you thought that undergrad was hard, you ain't seen nothing yet. And what it told me is that the higher you get, the higher the stakes are, the more work you got to put in. And people can like you, but you got to do the work, which is something that's really hard. It's like I get frozen a lot in life. And in grad school, I learned how to unstick myself. I went through like these little bouts of depression, like, you know what? Screw it. This ain't going to work. But at this point, I'm already thousands of dollars in. So I was like, no, I'm going to finish this. I learned to invest in yourself. I learned that nobody's going to invest in you if you can't invest in yourself. The thing that I learned about the family piece, which is the biggest thing that I learned, because my family started to take advantage of me when I went into college. I only heard from some family when things were going wrong. I paid for diapers. I paid phone bills. I paid so much. And I didn't have money. I had my loans. I had my school stuff, right? The things that I was using to eat. And it was always, Charlesy, we're going to pay you back. My family calls me Charlesy. They don't call me Charles. Like, if you know me really closely, that Charlesy is my name, right? Because it's my father's name is Charles. My grandfather's name is Charles. So none of us were actually called Charles in our homes. My grandfather was Pops. My dad was Chucky. And I was Charlesy. So it would be Charlesy, I need, boom. Charlesy, I need this. I need that. And when things are going well, you didn't hear from him. And that goes for extended family. That goes for immediate family, whatever. To the point where I had to get at everybody. Look, the bank is closed. I ain't got no more money. I can't keep doing this. And if you're not calling me about something good, just don't call me. I can't carry all that stuff. And something that young black folks, I would say even young poor folks. I'm gonna say young black people, because I'm a young black person. I don't want to speak for nobody else. But in my situation, you know, you feel that survivor's guilt, that survivor's remorse so much that you want to be helpful to everybody. And you feel like you're selling out if you're not doing that, if you're not bending over backwards for people. But check this out. Like, if you do that constantly, people will take advantage of you. And I don't even know if it's a malicious thing. I just come from a family of hustlers. And when you take advantage, like when somebody is giving you the green light to do that. So that situation with my cousin really primed me for how I needed to deal with family. And I learned really quickly, and we don't have those problems no more. And then finally, the business piece. And what I learned in that was only the results matter. My why for doing that business didn't matter. And I learned that you got to pay yourself first. The quintessential moment that I had running this business, running Mac Management with one of my closest friends ever, who I look at like a brother, was when he and I were in East Oakland preparing for a show that we were help host. We're going to help host this artist that came. I think it was Dave Hollister. I don't remember. We did a show for Lloyd, for Dave Hollister, for a bunch of people, right? And he and I had to share a slice of pizza. That's how broke we were. We had to share a slice of pizza. And do you know that later that week, that show that we put on brought in over $13,000 that went into somebody else's pocket? Crazy. Crazy stuff. Crazy. Right? And it just taught me that you got to learn how to pay yourself first. Bye, Maria. I just started the message that Maria was signing off. Thank you for joining me. So anyway, the piece is called Be the Greatest Loser Ever. Those losses built up so much in me to where I could start winning and doing the things that I'm able to do right now. And I reflected on two of my favorite people that I've just always looked up to. Michael Jordan, who I think is the greatest athlete of all time, who talks about his failures a lot. And Steve Jobs, like somebody who started a company and was put out. How big of a loss is that, right? You kicking me out of my own company? Are you crazy? Is you stupid? Not are you stupid. Is you stupid? You think you about to kick me out of my own company? Listen, it would have been some furniture moving in that place. Me and Scully would have been boxing. But he had to go away and he regrouped and he came back and had one of the biggest comebacks ever. Apple is the largest company in the history of the planet. It's crazy. I think Rockefeller's, I think if you adjust for inflation, I think maybe, I don't know. Don't get me the line. But I just reflected on those things. And so, long story short, I already told a lot. But that's basically what the article is about. Read it and share it. And I'm glad that I got both of these things going, the podcast and the Huffington Post stuff, because I think that they need to work in tandem. But basically, I brought you in to something really intimate and personal for me. And I lose a lot, and was the point to this young man, is that I lose a whole bunch. I lose all the time. But those things are the things that set you up for the win. As the great poet Big Sean says, I guess it took 10 years for me to become an overnight success. Because I like that line. People be hating on Sean, but Sean got bars. The thing that I learned out of that and why that's I enjoy that statement is because people only see, they only notice the wins. They only notice that those 40-point nights that Jordan had, not all those, you know, he missed a lot of shots, you know. There was a lot of no's that you had to hear. Man, there's a lot of things that I messed up just last week. There are things, all those things that I told you about, like how I'm a slow learner and it takes me a while and stuff. Like that stuff, I still struggle with that. I still struggle with those things. And, but you got to keep moving forward. And sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you got to go and you got to lick your wounds and come back. But losing builds character. I'm not with this whole new generation of things where everybody gets a medal. Well, we're not keeping score in a basketball game because we don't want to hurt nobody's feelings. No, you are going to lose. You are going to fall on your ass more times than not. And the getting up is where the character is. That's where that is. And I worry when I see folks not necessarily doing that anymore. But, and, you know, so that young man got it. And just to give you an update of that young man graduated from school, and he tells his own be the greatest loser ever story to other young people that's coming up under him. And so, man, I'm just excited to be writing again. I think that that's, I didn't think I'd feel like that. I didn't think I'd feel that good about that. But I do. And I'm also getting back on the speaking tour. I have two speaking engagements coming up, but this is one, the one that's coming up that's I'm nervous about. I haven't been nervous to speak since I was a teenager. I have been asked to do the commencement for my elementary school, Lafayette, which is which you think would be easy, right? I'm talking to some fifth graders about moving on to the sixth grade. But I'm really nervous about that, y'all. Like, it means so much to me to be able to do that. It's, you know, I've talked in front of some amazing people. One of my favorite talks was in Rhode Island or Atlanta or in Miami on South Beach. My goodness, right? But I don't think any of that compares to being able to go back to the school where it all started, and to be able to speak to these people. And so I'm really looking forward to that. So I'll keep you all posted on that stuff. But that's it. I know I just talked about my writing today. So what? It's my podcast. I can do what I want to do. No, but thank you all for the support. It'll be up as soon as Huff puts it up. But I appreciate the support. I appreciate you all rocking with me and listening. And the show has been really successful. And it allows me to get things off my chest and to talk about just things that I care about. And surprisingly, there's some folks that care about it too. So with that being said, I'ma get up with y'all. Take care of yourselves and each other. God bless. Peace.
Follow me into a solo, get in the flow, and you can picture like a photo. Music makes mellow, maintains to make melodies for MCs, motivates to break some everlasting. I can go on for days and days with rhyme displays that engrave deep as x-rays. I can take a phrase that's rarely heard, flip it, now it's a daily word. I can get iller than armor, killing a bomb, but no alarm. Rock Kimmel, remain calm. Self-esteem make me super superb and supreme. Before a microphone, still I've been. This was a tape. I wasn't supposed to break. I was supposed to wait, but let's motivate. I wanna see and keep following and swallowing. Taking the making, biting and falling. Brothers try and others die to get the formula, but I'ma let you sweat, you still ain't warm. You a step away from frozen, stiff as if you're posing. Dig into my brain as the rhyme gets chosen. So follow me, or what you're thinking, you were first. Let's travel at magnificent speeds around the universe. What could you say as the earth gets further and further away? Planets are small as balls of clay, astray into the Milky Way. World's out of sight, far as the eye can see, not even a satellite. Now stop and turn around and look, as you stand in the darkness, your knowledge took. So keep staring, soon you suddenly see a star. You better follow it, cause it's the R. This is a lesson if you're guessing, if you're borrowing. Hurry, hurry, step right up and keep following the leader.